Wes. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Tomorrow on the show, in fact, all day tomorrow on Radio Leeds, we'll be hearing the West Yorkshire stories about Iraq to mark a decade since the start of the war, 10 years ago tomorrow. And as we get ready for tomorrow, we're joined by Simon Brown, who is a former soldier from Morley. And Simon's life changed forever in 2006 whilst under attack in Iraq. And he's with us now to tell his story. Morning, Simon.
Good morning, Wes.
Well, back in 2006, I believe you were just 18 years old.
No, I was 28 in 2000.
28.
I was actually on my third operational tour.
Oh, were you?
Second one of Iraq, but I served in Kosovo at 20 in 1999.
So you'd had a lot of experience of conflict.
Yeah, I'd been around a bit.
And that far, had you been in any situations that were life-threatening, or where you thought to yourself, this is hairy?
Not at the time, but then afterwards, when I thought back on it, I thought, ooh, that was a bit close. But at the time, you're kind of not thinking about it as it happens. It's sort of like you don't live your life in real time.
Really?
You're kind of getting on with everything, thinking, focusing on what's going on at the time. And then it's afterwards when you look back and you review your own performance almost, and you think, ooh, actually, that were a bit close.
So there were plenty of those before 2006?
Yeah.
And why did you go to Iraq?
Because I was told to. basically, yeah, we were given the orders to mobilise. We got sent to Kuwait, ready to invade in 2003, which is, you know, part of the invasion force. And, you know, I took an oath of allegiance, and I took that oath seriously, that when Queen and Country called me up to do its bidding, I will go do it.
At the time, of course, not everybody was convinced we should be going to Iraq. As a soldier, yourself having that oath and being told to go there, did you feel a sense of conflict within yourself?
No, because when you go to conflict, when you go to war, you can only focus on one thing. If you start dividing your focus, you come back in a box, or you come back in a box, and it's... We were given a task, you know, and we all thought, we went out there, right, our task is to complete this mission.
What was the mission?
The mission was to depose Saddam Hussein, as far as we were concerned, and you know, that was what we were given. We were told to go into Basra and hold the city against Iraqi forces, and that's what we did. We did it very well. Because I remember liberating Basra, and that's what it felt like at the time, because, you know, the people were in the streets jubilant in 2003, and you know, there's one of my redeeming memories of my career is watching the people in the street shouting and cheering and going out after what was curfew and things like that. And to me, that meant something. You know, the politics of it didn't really affect me. I'd taken an oath, and I did the job that I was asked to do. And I personally think I did my job very professionally, and kept my integrity, because I knew that at the end of the day, I wanted to be able to sleep at night with every decision I'd ever made.
So this would have been around 2003?
That was in 2003, yeah. I crossed the border on the 23rd. And I know operation started on the 19th, and let's say I crossed the border on the 23rd from Kuwait.
So then fast forward 3 years to 2006,
yeah.
And we're approaching Christmas time of 2006, and I know exactly what I was doing at Christmas time 2006, and it's relatively so recent that you can remember, you can picture what you were doing at that time. You were back in Iraq.
Yeah.
And what, something went horribly wrong. What was happening in the build-up to that?
The build-up to it, the whole morning started on the toss of a coin, basically. I tossed a coin to see which commander went with which patrol.
And is that regular for that to happen? That usual?
Yeah, there's things like that. You do little things just to bring some normality. You know, you're going out on a patrol in a war zone. You need to bring a bit of normality. You know, rock, paper, scissors, toss a coin, just to break up the dangerousness, if that's a real word. Yeah, you kind of toss a coin, and I won the toss, so I went, right, I'll go with this patrol. My junior commander went with another patrol, and we went out with the vehicles, and the patrol we were with, we went into a particularly dodgy area, and while we were there, just sort of making sure people were behaving themselves, one of the vehicles broke down, and then we came under fire. And obviously, the insurgents realised that the broken vehicle was an easy target and targeted it. My job was like the AA in Basra, basically. I had to go and fetch anything broken, blown up, or bogged in. So I took my crew in to get the guys out. There's six people in that vehicle that, you know, nobody was prepared to leave there. So I took my crew in, took my vehicle in, and got them out of there. And that was on the extraction. I'd done all the dangerous stuff. And on the extraction, a sniper got me. Just as we were leaving the area, which I felt the impact on the side of my face and kind of thought, oops, I'm in trouble now.
And what did you, how did it feel?
The initial impact was just like being smashed in the face by something really hard. You know, it's a piece of metal moving at the speed of sound. I was very fortunate that it was a clean round, and, you know, the distance, all the ballistics around it were very much in my favour. So the round went clean through my face, it went in my left cheek and came out my right cheek. I kind of sort of fell down into the vehicle and screamed like a girl, and then kind of realised that I was still alive, and the only way I was going to stay alive was by getting a grip of myself and kind of sorting out my first aid. So the fact that I wasn't knocked out was the first thing that saved my life, because I was able to hold my palate up, so I was able to breathe. I made a poor job, I'm told, of bandaging up my face. And then just try to keep myself calm so I didn't go into shock. And basically then held that position for 25 minutes till we got to the medical centre. Fortunately, the medic had passed on all the information and they were fully ready for me arriving. When we got back to the med centre, I climbed out of the vehicle, jumped off the vehicle, still completely unaware of how injured I really was. Knocked out the first two medics that came to grab me. Then I was put onto a stretcher.
Why did you knock them out?
Because I panicked. Obviously, I couldn't see at the time, but I just assumed my eyes were shut. I hadn't contemplated that my eyes had been damaged. And people just started grabbing me, and obviously adrenaline's pumping. You know, the situation, I think I'm pretty scared, and two people grabbed me without telling me, and I started swinging. So six more put me on a stretcher, strapped me down, and pumped me full of drugs. And I woke up in Birmingham 17 days later.
You were out of it for 17 days?
The drug-induced kind were for 17 days, yeah. So, and then, like I say, I woke up 2 days before Christmas thinking, this isn't where I was.
What did they tell you when you came to?
When I came round, you know, the doctors used a lot of big words that I didn't really understand. Basically, my left eye was gone completely, and my right eye wasn't much hope for vision. As you said earlier, I've got 10-15% vision back in my right eye, which for me is a victory, because I can use it, and I use it really well. With the training I've had from blind vets, I've been able to really, really take advantage of what I've got left and use that to rebuild my life. But laying in that hospital bed, listening to those words that you're going to be a blind man, my world fell out. I just thought, what's the point in carrying on?
You suffered quite a lot after that.
It was
a really tough time for you after that.
Yeah, it was just complete depression. Like, I seriously thought, what's the point in carrying on? You know, I was looking at saving up with medication and taking it in a Warner, and I just couldn't see how there was a future for me as a dignified individual, and I just thought, what's the point? I'm going to be dependent. And I'd gone from being a soldier to a disabled person, and my naivety and misunderstanding of the term and the people who are disabled meant that I didn't really know what was next. And obviously the Paralympics have proved to us that disability is not a bad thing. You know, people can achieve an awful lot, but it wasn't until I heard about two of my friends actually being killed that I suddenly thought, hang on a minute, I've got no right to be upset here, I'm still here. And
That was the changing moment for you.
Was literally a light switch being turned on.
Because it was going to be a tough, hard slog, wasn't it, to get to the point that you're at now, where you are comfortable and you can talk about it and you can appreciate just how lucky you are that you're still alive. It was going to be a really hard, tough slog to get to that point.
It was, yeah. And in all fairness, it's still going on. It's 6.5 years on since I got injured, and I'm still going through surgery. I'm still in the rehabilitation phase. You know, this is not an overnight fix. It's a legacy, you know, and I'll still be blind when it's all finished. So, you know, every day is still going to be challenging, but the fact that I've got through the hardest part, I think, means that I now know that I can continue and still build and still be, you know, a contributing member of society, which is pretty much what we all want, to be honest.
And you do help society. You have your finger in many pies when it comes to charity.
Yeah, I'm lucky that the opportunity's come along for me to be involved in major charities. I work for Blind Veterans UK, which is, you know, a great job and hugely rewarding, the work I do with them. I've had a lot of time to work with Help for Heroes and some of the things they've done and watched how they've helped swing public opinion so that veterans get support. The RBL and SAFA have been there in the background as well, doing things. And, you know, in one sense, I'm very lucky that, you know, we have these charities there. But in the other sense, I'm really proud to be British, because these charities wouldn't exist without the generosity of the public and the way that the public have rallied round to support the men and women that I call my brothers. It just, yeah, it just makes you proud to be British.
What do you hope for the future?
My hope for the future is that, you know, that what we've done now, we're going to pull out of Afghanistan in a couple of years, and inevitably people will forget. You know, something else will come along, something more important, and people's focus will change. So my hope is that we just don't forget. You know, we remember the sacrifices, not just of my generation, but generations gone by. And I think that Iraq was a big swinging point, where the public suddenly thought, hang on a minute, these are our brothers, our sisters, our uncles, aunts, you know, sons and daughters that are getting killed and maimed and are going through all this hardship. And the public suddenly turned around and went, you know what, we might not agree with where they've been sent or why they've been sent there, but we sure as hell not gonna let down these people that are from our communities. And again, it's one of these things now that I'm allowed to walk around my head up high because of my service, I'm very proud to be British, and I'm very grateful for the British public for giving me the opportunity to have my life back.
Simon, thank you very much for coming in.
No, it's a pleasure, thank you.
Really great to talk to you. Thank you so much for being so honest and open and candid. It's just remarkable. 10 years tomorrow, the decade since the start of the war in Iraq. That's Simon Brown from Morley. And we're going to mark the 10th anniversary tomorrow. If you have something that you want to share with us, maybe you're an ex-serviceman, maybe the family of a serviceman or woman, 0845 303 3333, or you can text 81333 and start your text off with the word Leeds. Simon Brown on Radio Leeds.